It's 2400 Zulu, and what do you say we get this show on the road? This is South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the South Cars organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This South Cars server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System provided by KB8ZGL, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off the system and establish your contact directly so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short-time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they checked in. We'll take a pause. Information regarding our HF operation may be found on the World Wide Web at southcars.com and for our digital operation at voip.southcars.com. I'm Gary KC2RMO, welcoming our net controls tonight, Gordon KY6V and Roger W4RF, along with Daryl VO1UKZ and George NO70. Now that's an all-star cast. I'm located in Syracuse, New York's beautiful outer Comstock section with a temperature of 56 degrees, and it's falling rapidly as the wind continues to howl out there. Big weather change coming our way. Now, prior to starting our net, I need to ask, is there any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled at this time? Nothing heard. Do we have anybody celebrating their birthday this week? Again, nothing heard. This is the Thursday Informational Net Open Forum, or TIN for short. This net is conducted to provide general information pursuant to amateur-related subjects and or areas of interest to those participating. All are engaged to participate and ask questions of our guest speaker or speakers. Now, let me advise all stations connected that this net might be recorded for a future presentation on our website as a podcast. All stations participating will be part of that recording. We'll let it drop for a minute. As I said, I'm KC2RMO, and we've got a great net for you tonight. A bunch of guys that know their stuff, and they're going to tell us all about mesh networks. You know, what are mesh networks? You know, you've heard that name, and maybe you've even read up a little bit on them, but you know, you never really got that deep into it. So tonight, here's our chance to get deep into it, and we'll kick things off because my appetite for this is whetted. I kind of got into this or got curious about this a long time ago, so I really do look forward to hearing what's going to happen. Let's get things underway. KY6V, Gordon, are you there? And I'm waiting with bated breath to hear about what you have to offer.
Well, sir, you're a gentleman and a scholar. Hi, Gary. Thank you, sir, for opening up this evening. Good evening, South Cars. Gordon here, KY6V, and tonight's TIN program will be actually twofold. We will open with a discussion on modifying commercial routers for ham use, employing a mesh network for communication coverage, as Gary has mentioned. And in addition, we will be discussing packet radio and its use in emergency communication. I'm very pleased and honored to be riding this evening with three good friends and ones that I consider experts in the digital world. And they would be Roger W4RFJ from Ridley Park, Pennsylvania, Daryl VO1UKZ from St. John's, Newfoundland, and George NO70 November Oscar 7 Oscar from Nottingham, Maryland. Now, if the four of us are unable to answer your questions from the top of our heads, we certainly know where to go find the answers for you. Let me recharge the battery and buy a nickel, and I'll be right back with you. Okay, let's get started with the first half of tonight's program by discussing why we are discussing what we are discussing this evening. How to modify a commercial router for ham use, antenna considerations, mesh networking and why it should be considered, and of course questions and answers along the way. So why are we discussing this? There appears to be an ever-increasing number of hams that enjoy taking on the new frontier, if you want to put it that way. Those who are programmers have gotten together and designed software and firmware to modify commercial equipment for ham use. And their intent in all of this is to provide an RF communication platform that is independent of other commercial methods, that is self-supportive and further usable during such emergency situations when everything around us just goes down and bites the dust. In the quiet times, those times where we don't have an emergency, you know, the system can be used for fun and ham communication. The wireless router is something that most of us are familiar with. You know, it's a little box that is normally connected between your computer and your modem. In this case, at least for now, we're putting the modem on the shelf. What we are discussing here is a method to modify your router into a low-power, gigahertz-based ham digital transceiver. And I might add, this is easily done, and here's how. Let me buy another nickel. For those not aware, we do have a 3-minute active timer here on the SouthCars server. You first note the manufacturer and model number of your router. Now, this is very important. You then download the new software from, and I'll try and put this in the text box in a little bit, but it's http://www.broadband-hamnet.org. I'll repeat that. http://www.broadband-hamnet.org. You open your computer browser, you connect to your router, you pull up the page for the firmware update, and you upload the new software file to the router. It's just as simple as that. A couple of things here I want to tell you about, though. Be very careful that you are downloading the proper file for your particular router. Now, there's a whole grunch of chipset manufacturers out there, and not all the routers are using the same chipset. So it's important that you go to this site and get the file that is appropriate for your particular wireless router. And there are some things that you'll be looking at when you get into the site. Some routers do not have enough flash capability. And if you try to ram some software or firmware into that, you're liable to come up with a dead pigeon. So be very, very careful. So after you've got the firmware in there, your router is now almost ham-matized. That's the word that I thought I'd come up with. Running HSMM-Mesh. And that stands for High Speed Multimedia Mesh, also known as Broadband Hamnet. You now do some configuration settings, such as entering your call, selecting the channel frequency you wish to use, adjust the power, and other parameters you may or not wish to play with, the likes of baud rate and etc. It gives you a lot of things you can do. Let me buy another nickel. Okay, now that we have the router changed, we need to think about the antenna. And some things never change. The higher the better, the more gain the better, etc. If you choose to use the antennas on your router, you'll probably be able to talk no further than about halfway down your street. So if you want to think big, be the big guy, think about this. By the time you get operating in the gigahertz range, your coax feed line becomes very attenuated, very lossy. Some to the point you can't get a signal from your computer to the antenna. Think about mounting your router in a watertight box and next to the antenna. Simply run your Ethernet cable or at least your power cable down and into the shack. Again, thinking big, think about a rotatable parabolic antenna. I mean, if you're going to go fancy, that's the way to do it. Something with about 30 dB gain, and you'll be spitting out all kinds of RF there in the gigahertz range. And you'll also be king of the road, I might add. Okay, now it's time to talk about the communication platform. The mesh network is ideal for this type of operation. I'm going to try and get through this pre-stuff here before we start asking for questions, because some of the questions that are asked we may be covering, if you don't mind me doing it this way. The mesh network is ideal for this type of operation. You know, it's cheap to make happen. No coax, fiber optics, the like to contend with. It is self-healing, self-programming, and multifaceted. Think about those big high-powered words. The system is RF-derived, can be run on batteries, and therefore impervious to other commercial services. A wireless mesh network, WMN is the acronym for that, is a communication network made up of radio nodes organized in mesh topology. It is also a form of wireless ad hoc network. Wireless mesh networks often consist of mesh clients, mesh routers, and gateways. The mesh clients are often laptops, cell phones, or other wireless devices, while the mesh routers forward traffic to and from the gateways, which may or may not be connected to the internet. That's to your discretion. The coverage area of the radio nodes working as a single network is sometimes called a mesh cloud, C-L-O-U-D. Access to this mesh cloud is dependent on the radio nodes working in harmony with each other to create a radio network. A mesh network is reliable and offers redundancy. When one node can no longer operate, the rest of the nodes can still communicate with each other directly or through one or more intermediate nodes. There's a term that's used in this realm. It's called digipeding, where a unit can just forward information right past their location to the next location up the road. Wireless mesh networks can self-form, self-heal. Wireless mesh networks can be implemented with various wireless technologies, including 802.11, 802.15, 802.16, you know, cellular technologies, combination of more than one type. So we have a little bit more to talk about in the wireless mesh area, but let me take a break here. I don't want to put anybody to sleep. Do we have any comments or questions at this point? And I want to say again, good evening to the contributors on the program here this evening. And I have a message for you, George. I enjoyed the heck out of your email this morning. And I want to tell you, let me drop it here a second. I want to tell you that I've checked the stage just before the program started. And it's slick. It's slippery. So, George, I would recommend you take off your shoes and socks. You'll have a little more friction when you're walking across the stage. Okay, any comments or questions at this point before we continue? This is KY6V, and this is South Carnes.
Yeah, you did just drop out, Gordon.
I'm sorry, did you say I dropped out, or did I time out?
Timed out.
You timed out, Gordon. I think Roger will be able to fill you in for where you timed out.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry about that. I was trying to be careful on that, too. Roger, you confirm it was a timeout. Can you tell me approximately where I lost it, or can we just go over it with what follows? Over.
I'm trying to remember now. I think you were it was just after you had said something about the mesh network being it's not an I'm trying to remember the word. It's the type of network it was. I'm sorry, I can't even think of the word.
Okay, that was probably, I was indicating other platforms that could be used. Wireless mesh networks can be implemented with, you know, various wireless technology, and that would include the 802.11, 802.15, 802.16, 802.16. Cellular technology, combinations of more than one type of, that about the area, over?
No. You just mentioned what type of network it was, the topology.
Okay. Well, I hate to be redundant here, but I'll go over just a little bit of that. A wireless mesh network is called a WMN in acronym form, Whiskey Mike November. Is a communication network made up of radio nodes organized in mesh topology. Hope I'm in the right spot here, Raj. It is also a form of wireless ad hoc network. Wireless mesh networks often consist of mesh clients, mesh routers, gateways. The mesh clients are often laptops, cell phones, and other wireless devices, while the mesh routers forward traffic to and from gateways, which may, and this is important, or may not connect to an internet. So, you know, that's up to the way that you guys want to run your mesh. Whether you want the internet influence in there or you want a private circle. Okay, I'm going to leave it at that and pick up some more check-ins if there are any, and we'll get through the rest of this and see what happens. KY6V for check-ins for South Carts.
Whiskey Hotel 6, Delta Whiskey Foxtrot, Todd in Honolulu, with a mesh repeater.
Kilo Mike Oscar in Ventrisha, Scotland.
And Romeo Fox Juliet.
Okay. Well, I got four of you. Let's pick those up. Mike Oscar. I guess that was Kilo Mike Oscar. Hi, Steve. Wasn't familiar with that call, so you took me a little off guard. Got LVQ. DWF, hello, Mr. Hawaiian Islands, KMO Stephen, and RFJ Rogers. Starting at the top, LQV, come aboard, Robert, and what's happening?
Not a lot, Gordon. You've got my brain running around here in circles. But I'm enjoying it. And by the way, Stephen is a member of the club, that's the Mike Mike Zero Papa Yankee Radio Club. We've also got the Mike 6 Lima Kilo Golf in here. You'll be listening as well. And that's about it, Gordon. I told you I'd be here, and I am. And I've got two members with me. It's Mike 3 Lima Victor Comeback. Back to Kilo Yankee 6 Victor.
Well, that's fantastic, Robert. I want to thank you for bringing your friends along, too. It's more European flair I've seen in one sitting in quite a while. So welcome, you guys. Let me turn the house around and point it towards the Hawaiian Islands. Tell us, Todd, how many guys you've got involved in the modification of the routers and, you know, the mesh network and so on. And have you run into, or have your friends run into, any hurdles in the modification side? DWF, front and center from KY6V. Aloha.
KY6V, this is WH6DWF here in Honolulu. Well, unfortunately, there, Gordon, there's only two of us in all of Hawaii that have mesh repeaters. Myself and KH6TZ, Wayne. And he works an awful lot, so... But when he's got some time off, we get it all going. But it's a great platform for using for internet and weather data and webcam. It can also be used to control a repeater. Say you got a repeater up on the mountain stuff, and there's no internet up there. You can actually provide an internet access for a repeater as what's called upside down platform. So it's very versatile. But again, it's kind of complicated because the router has to be super close to the antenna. So you got to build a customized case for the router. Back to net, WH6DWF.
Very good, Todd. I was trying to elude that earlier. You know, mount that baby right up next to the antenna so that the feed line is very, very, very short. You don't get into problems of attenuation and loss and that kind of stuff. Well, okay, you know, you hit on one of the things here, Todd, that I was sort of feeling is necessary. You've either have to, if you're getting into this stuff, into the mesh network, you want to build a mesh network, you got to have a lot of friends that are interested in doing the same thing. So to my way of thinking, a good starting point is a radio club, and have that as a radio club project type thing. Let's get more people interested and more people scattered around. Your mesh network would grow faster and so on and so forth. What do you think of that idea, Todd? Over.
Well, Gordon, you got to keep in mind this is line of sight only. It works like a microwave. There can't be any interference, say, with buildings, trees, structures of that sort. It's straight line of sight. I was going to mention that, and I use a 14-element Yagi, which is not very big, but it does have like a 30 dB gain on it. But it's with the difficult terrain here, it's hard to get more people involved in it because we lack line of sight here. But you know, we're trying to get more people involved, and if you know, right now it's actually kind of difficult to find those routers because you can't find them at rummage sales or garage sales here. You have to order them off the internet. Unfortunately, a lot of these folks won't ship to Hawaii, so it could be rather expensive just to get the router. Back to net, WH6DWF.
Interesting comment. I didn't realize that you had a transportation issue, you know. Too expensive to ship to the Hawaiian Islands. My goodness sake, gracious, it's only, 3,000 miles from the coast, maybe? All right, thanks a million, Todd. Appreciate you being there. Let me pick up Stephen. Good evening, Stephen. My name is Gordon. I'm down here in southeast Florida, in the United States, on the other side of the puddle from you. Nice to make your acquaintance. KMO, come aboard from KY6V. Okay, I catch you at a bad time. 2-Mike-0, Kilo Mike Oscar. Steven, you're being called. KY6V.
Hi, yeah, sorry, I must have missed the transmit button there. Yeah, Gordon, I was very interested in your topic tonight. My profession day-to-day is in software development, so I tend to be interested in the technical side of things as well as the radio side, so yeah, it was all real interesting stuff. I'm interested to look at the site to see what kind of range of hardware is supported by these firmwares, to see if there's something that, you know, we already have lying around, or whether we'll need to go out and buy an old router to do that. But yeah, definitely sounds interesting. Over.
Well, very good, Stephen. Well, first of all, welcome aboard, and second, with your profession and ingenuity in that area, you know, we'll be picking your brain too. So, hope you come back as often as you can, and you have the time. Robert can fill you in on the nets we have and how we operate and when we're on and that kind of stuff when time permits. Okay, let me throw it up there to Chief Son. RFN1J, I noticed Gary missed your J. Did you pick up on that? KY6V, hello, Runge.
Good morning, Gordon, and good morning to South Cars. This is W4. Wait a minute, this isn't Saturday morning. Gordon, yes, I did, and I gave him heck in the text box. I don't know if you read that. good evening, everybody, and this is W4RFJ, and this is an interesting topic. I had a couple of points to make to you, Gordon, or to the group. You mentioned that running a wireless, one of these wireless devices to an antenna, the coax tends to eat up your RF energy before it gets to the antenna, and which makes it more reasonable to mount the router or the RF device, microwave device, up near the antenna. And one of the things that you might have to read up on or become familiar with is a thing they call power over Ethernet, which is basically a way of putting DC energy on the unused twisted pairs of a Cat5 cable to get DC or AC up to the box to where it can be processed and made to whatever value you need to run your equipment up there. Let me grab a nickel. And I don't know if anybody's aware, but the mesh network is basically, the mesh protocols are basically derived from what they call the Zigbee protocols. I was just trying to look up what college it was that developed the Zigbee protocols. They made a bunch of little soil sensors that they threw out into a cornfield, and these little sensors had RF devices in them, and they were developed to establish their neighbors and develop routes so that all the data they collected would get back to the home machine waiting at the edge of the field. I don't know if anybody's aware of that, but the protocols are basically just that. You mentioned that the network is self-healing and self-building, and it basically reestablishes routes dependent upon what devices are available. So that's all I had to share. I just thought I'd throw in a little bit of, I'm lost for words tonight. It's been a long day, Gordon. Back to you, sir.
Okay. Very good, Raj. Are you pretty well set to ad lib after I get through with the router and the mesh network, or how do you want to plan things, over?
I was going to pretty much ad lib, but I really don't have a ton of information, only because there's so many different avenues. It's really hard to nail one specific thing down pat, so I just thought I'd ad lib. But back over to you, Gordon.
Okay. As I mentioned in the email, I'd like to let's spot George in between my final and your pickup. Is that okay?
Gordon, I'm tickled pink. I just hope George's imagination doesn't get us all thinking we're sitting in some palace with slippery floors. Over.
Well, we'll get into that later. That's the way that I PR'd it on our breaking news on the website and the emails that just went out. Okay, guys and gals, let me finish up with some comments here on the current discussion. And this is Gordon, KY6V for South Cars, and this is our third Thursday TIN net for this month. Next month, I might add, we're calling off TIN because on the 24th, we're going to have a Santa Express. And then we'll be picking it up again in January, and there'll be a good conversation that's on the books right now that's going to be spearheaded by Daryl up there in Newfoundland, VO1UKZ. Okay, let's get back into wireless mesh architecture is a first step towards providing cost-effective and dynamic high-bandwidth networks over a specific coverage area. I think it sort of speaks for itself. A wireless mesh infrastructure is, in effect, a network of routers minus the cabling between the nodes. It's built on a peer radio device that don't have to be called or cabled to a wired port like traditional WLANs, access points, and so on and so forth. Mesh infrastructure carries data over large distances by splitting the distance into a series of short hops, which I'm sure you're familiar with out there, Todd. You get somebody on the top of the hill that can squirt down the hill, why, maybe you can get more guys involved. Intermediate nodes not only boost the signal, but, you know, comparatively pass data from point A to point B by making forwarding decisions based on the knowledge of the network. Such an architecture may, with careful design, provide high bandwidth, spectral efficiency, economic advantage over the coverage area, and all of those big words. Wireless mesh networks have a relatively stable topology. Let me buy a nickel. Don't want to do that again. Except for the occasional failures of nodes or addition of new nodes, the path of traffic being aggregated from a large number of end users changes infrequently. Particularly, all the traffic in an infrastructure mesh network is either forwarded to or from a gateway. While in ad hoc networks or client mesh networks, the traffic flows between arbitrary pairs of nodes. This type of infrastructure can be decentralized with no central server, or centrally managed with a centrally server. Both are relatively inexpensive and very reliable and resilient, as each node needs only transmit as far as the next node. Let me buy a nickel. Nodes act as routers to transmit data from nearby nodes to peers that are too far away to reach in a single hop, resulting in a network that can span larger distances. The topology of a mesh network is also reliable, as each node is connected to several other nodes. Now think about this. You know, one breaks, the network keeps going because the other nodes just pick up the guy that fell down or broke or disappeared or something. If one node drops out of the network due to hardware failure or any other reason, the neighbors can quickly find another route using a routing protocol. The principle is simple to the way packets travel around the wired internet. Data will hop from one device to another until it reaches its destination. And dynamic routing algorithms implemented in each device allow it to happen. To implement such dynamic routing protocols, each device needs to communicate routing information to other devices in the network. I think that just makes sense. And each device then determines what to do with the data it receives. Either pass it on to the next device or keep it, you know, depending on the protocol. The routing algorithm uses such attempt to always ensure that the data takes the most appropriate, fastest route to its destination. All right, I'm going to grab that nickel again. So in closing, allow me to make some additional comments. If you are starting from scratch with your mesh network, obviously you will need to get a number of your friends interested to make the platform grow. And as I mentioned to Todd, a radio club project might be a good start. And I think Robert over there in Scotland is thinking about that approach. Individual nodes should try to have at least two stations that they can connect to. So when one fails, you know, you're still running with the bacon. Equipment such as routers, antennas, and the like can be found at garage sales, flea markets, ham fests, and the like. This entire system can be put together very inexpensively if you keep your eyes open and remember the ham motto, free or better. Guys and gals, thanks for your time. This has been Gordon, KY6V. I'm going to open it up for any quick questions on this subject before we move on with the program. Call now if there's anybody out there, please.
RM. I'm not going to use the O in order to atone for the dropped J.
Well, we could put RM-L. How's that one? Go ahead there, Professor.
Hey, thank you, sir. I had a couple questions in listening to you talk about some of the hardware aspects of this. I mean, this is something I wanted to do. I just need some folks around here to play with. You know? I don't know how many people are really interested at this point in doing it around here. I think there's some interest though. I think we could probably get a pretty nice network going. With about five or six people that I have in mind, but I kind of got down to a kind of a practical type of a thing. I have, or what I want to use for this is a WRT54G, which I understand is a popular router to modify for that. But that's got two antennas on it. So my thinking was, if I could score a couple of like dish network dishes. First of all, could they be used for that sort of a thing? Secondly, would I want to run both of those, and how would I configure them? I'll leave that for the Sterling panel to let me know, or operating suggestions anyway. But it's pretty cool stuff, and I'm enjoying the net. Back to you, sir.
Yeah, I like the dish network idea, but they're too small for my way of thinking. You know, I came out of the broadcasting area. We were running 6-foot parabolic dishes at 2 gigs, 30 dB gain. And I mean, those babies really got up and walloped. That was our microwave STL links, you know, studio to transmitter links. I did a little searching, Gary. The price on these antennas is not bad. You can get a parabolic dish for under $50 with about 26 dB. The thing that bothers the heck out of me, these salesmen and these manufacturers are talking in dBi and not DVD. And you've lost half your power by the time you buy a dBi and didn't get a DVD type thing, Gary. Over.
Yeah, that's like with any. They're all doing that. That's the thing, you know. If you're going to buy an antenna, and in case folks aren't really familiar with that, look very closely, because when they rate a dBi, that's in reference to an isotropic antenna, not an isotron, you know, the ones you see in the back of the magazines, but an isotropic antenna. That's a theoretical, non-existent device. It's kind of like. I don't know how you'd actually describe it. it's like a myth. Yeah, it's like a legend, you know. But Gordon's absolutely right. You know, if you want, it's like RMS versus music power, that sort of thing. If you really want the real deal, don't get suckered into DBI. I mean, sometimes that's the only that's the only spec you're going to see. But realize then that you're not getting everything that they're telling you. And once again, that's another good reason to make your own antennas. Hey, I just wanted to give a shout out here to something that happened today. That's totally unrelated, but I thought you might find this was cool. I always monitor the 6 meter repeater here, and I'm sitting there working at the computer, and I hear this kind of scratchy but very readable N5 call coming over the Syracuse repeater. Guy down in Texas working mobile, I had a nice 5 minute conversation with him before he went poof. Anyway, back to the net. This is KC2RMO.
Yeah, isn't that nice, Gary? Six is just absolutely gorgeous when it has an opening. It's like 10 meters, too, Both of those bands, when they're wide open, it's just fun. Okay. Well, put your thinking caps on, guys, as far as antennas and what have you. I'd have to look it up. I think that there's somewhere in the back of my skull here, it's saying it's 2.2 dB difference between an isotropic and a dipole. But at any rate, that's getting close to, 3 dB's half power, guys. So take it from there. But, I've made a parabolic antenna out of a Folgers coffee can of 13 gigs. It can be done. Okay, I'm going to see if George is ready to step up on the stage. Do it very gently, George. We don't want you slipping and sliding. Is it convenient for you at this point to take over with what you have to offer and then turn it to Roger, or would you like me to pick up Roger first, George? NO70 from KY6V, over.
KY6V, this is NO70. I have a question before I take it over here. Could you or Roger describe a little more of the emergency communications application of mesh and packet, and then what I have to offer, I think, would fit in a little better after a little more about MCOM. How does that sound? Over.
Okay. That's fine, George. And you're sounding great down here this evening, as usual. Why don't you go ahead and start rolling? We didn't touch very much on emergency communication with the mesh network, but there's no reason why not. From EOC to EOC, or if necessary, put a digipeater in the middle. W4RFJ, why don't you pick it up and start rattling, and then when you get into some of the emergency communication area, throw it at George. Over. All right, where'd you go, Chief? Ollie Ollie Oxenfree, W4RF and a J. And a J, KY6V calling.
I'm here, Gordon. A little technical difficulty, and I'm looking for my notes. And I lost the sheet that I wanted to reference. Give me just a second here. W4RFJ.
Okay. Roger, Dodger. Well, guys and gals, let's see if there's any other questions in here before we go into packet radio and emergency communication. Anything that's been covered so far? Or anything that you are thinking about in the conversation that's going to be coming up. Over.
This is KM0, Stephen here. I've got a couple of questions and comments, if that's okay.
Certainois. Steve, you go right ahead, sir. KY6V for Southcars.
Okay, I'm starting off with observation. One of the things we discuss at the club on a regular basis, I see Robert has unfortunately gone off, but what we're trying to get into is building antennas, and we've been making loops and things, and things like Yagi beams and whatever has been slightly outside of our scope, and for now because of the size of it. So it may be working at that frequency range into gigahertz make that more feasible. The next question was about, I'm assuming with all of these, what we're talking about tonight, it's going to be on the ham frequencies, so it will be ham users only. And my question then was, if you're using this network to transmit data as well, now you talked about connecting laptops and other client devices, are there any restrictions on using encryption over that, you know, if you're transmitting data? Because certainly our license requires that, that your transmissions aren't encrypted. They can be encoded, obviously, but not encrypted. And I was wondering if there are any restrictions on that. I'll let someone else get in.
Yeah, okay, Stephen. Well, boy, those are two good points. You will find that there's no encryption available in the current software for HamNet application and mesh communication for the very reason that that you have already mentioned, that it's not allowed in the amateur radio bylaws. It certainly isn't here in the United States, and apparently is not in your area either. You will find that the current Part 15, and I'm referring really to the FCC when I say Part 15, here in the United States, but the frequency allocations worldwide that have been assembled for use for router applications, as an example, the 2.4 gigahertz range, the 5 gigahertz range, and so on and so forth, have within that grouping of channels frequencies that actually fall in our licensed amateur bands. And I think on the 802.11 platform, I don't know which one it is now, B or G or both, it's something like the first six channels in that grouping fall right smack dab in the 2.4 megacycle ham band. Stephen, over.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting. I suppose, are there any restrictions? So obviously there's the 802.11 standards for, you know, kind of transmission within your own house. Is that subject to power levels that mean that it, you know, is feasible, you know, or isn't feasible to use it on the long distance? You know, I'm just wondering, could a non-ham user use this same technology, not under a ham license, but just using the 802.11 protocols or whatever? Over.
RFJ.
Yeah, you want to answer that? I was going to say, you know, there's some restrictions that are built in on the software that is used as the firmware implant to the router, the modification. You got to put a ham call down there, you know. I suppose somebody could do that and bootleg a call, but we'd catch him. Roger, go ahead on, and if you're ready, you can take it from there after you answer Stephen. Over.
Okay, this is W4RFJ. I hope I'm
getting in okay here.
Stephen, you mentioned something about power limitations. There are in the United States. Of course, the Wi-Fi mode is basically a form of spread spectrum, and we're limited to 1 watt output power, but we can also boost that up with gain antennas. But that is the power limitation that we have when we're operating in amateur radio mode on the amateur radio, within the amateur radio spectrum. However, a lot of hams have been utilizing some of the Part 15 devices, which is the unlicensed mode of communications with Wi-Fi, but that has a power limitation, I think, of like 100 or 200 milliwatts. It's pretty low. The standard output of what the Wi-Fi devices are using. So anyway, as far as the encryption, you know, your ad hoc network could be encrypted. However, we don't because of our operating rules, And of course, you have a system ID that will keep your mesh connected on that same network, the ID of the mesh itself. So, Stephen, did I answer your question? I'll turn it back over to you real quick, and then I'll get moving on into the packet stuff.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for that. Yeah, it was interesting to hear the different power levels between unlicensed versus ham modes. One kind of question which doesn't need to be answered just now, has anybody recorded what the largest area of a mesh has been covered, you know, in terms of, you know, square meters or square feet or something over the years? That's not a question for now, but just later on maybe it could be discussed. Okay, thanks very much. I'll let you carry on.
Okay, Stephen, I'll answer that question real quick. There's a really popular network in Germany. I think it's based out of Berlin, called Freifunk, Freifunk, or I might have gotten the IE backwards. I've done a lot of studying and reading up on their mesh network, and they've got a pretty phenomenal, that's what they use for their free internet access to the public. You might want to check into that, do some Googling on Freifunk out of Germany, and you'll get a lot of information there. They've got a lot of stuff on mesh, and that may answer some of your questions. Are you okay with that, Steve?
Yeah, that sounds great. I've actually got some friends in Berlin, so maybe see if I can get some favors from them. That's great. Thanks so much.
All right, Gordon, if it's okay with you, I'm going to continue on. I guess it's okay with him. This is W4RFJ, and we've been talking about Wi-Fi and how to convert your Wi-Fi router for a mesh routing. But, you know, we wanted to also talk about emergency communications and basically, you know, the digital role, the role of digital when it comes to communicating, especially for an emergency. And I guess, let me grab a nickel. I guess the biggest thing that we have to think about is, why do we want to use digital? Why is digital such a big thing? And I guess the biggest answer to that, the one that I hold close, is the accuracy of the traffic. You know, when we're talking to each other, we can misunderstand each other quite easily, even when we're spelling things phonetically. But when you send it digitally, it gets through without any error. So that's probably the biggest reason why we are so heavy into digital when it comes to emergency traffic. Okay, I see Gary's in there talking about J's. Anyway, long story short story longer, you know, packet or AX25 has been around since the early 1980s. You know, Tapper's been a big proponent to the development of digital communications for many, many years, and there's a lot of different things we can do with it. You know, we've got bulletin boards, we can do which we can drop off messages and pick up messages, keyboard to keyboard communications, DX clusters, I'm sure everybody's heard of that. Sorry, I slipped on the key there. And of course, we've got networking, even at low speeds. You know, we can network our message traffic. We use the bulletin boards to route that. And then again, we also have packet on the satellites. So we've got satellites up there that are actually orbiting bulletin board systems and or APRS systems. And APRS is automatic packet reporting or position reporting system, there's just a lot of different things that that digital's used for, or packet in particular. As far as ARES, or we could also include RACES or NTS, the National Traffic System, emergency communications packet radio is being used in many emergency services, whether packet is used to pass a message accurately and in large quantities, or to handle messages passed by the national traffic system. It can provide an important function like any other amateur mode when used correctly. A new application called APRS, which isn't really new, but it combines GPS, or positioning information, with packet radio. My wife calls it her personal load jack, because she can watch me wherever I go in my truck. This will allow a master station to plot on the computer the location of all the other stations in the field. We can also use it for search and rescue. If we put APRS on a few people on a long line searching a field, we could actually watch them in real time searching that field and be able to track where they've gone. But the main purpose for packet would be for short range, or you know, to get traffic or to get messages out of an affected area and into the mainstream of normal traffic. Let me grab a pause here. One of the things that fascinates me, and I'm sorry if I'm droning on a little too long with this, but one of the things that fascinates me is the ease and the capabilities that we have with just a little netbook, some software, a little interface to control your push to talk, and you can actually hook your computer's sound card right up to your HT and be able to transmit and receive packet radio. And it's just very inexpensive and very easy to do. So when it comes to emergency communications, having the ability to send and receive message traffic, especially in the different formats that the ARRL provides us, helps us communicate not only emergency to emergency services, but to the government agencies that help us get help where it needs to be sent. Anyway, I'm going to open the floor for any questions, and if there are none, I'll pass it over to my buddy George, and let's see if anybody's on board with any inquiries about what I've just covered, and I hope I covered it well enough. W4RF Jack.
RMO with a couple of thoughts.
And Victor X-Ray Papa with a couple of comments as well.
Okay, the net recognizes Romeo Mike Oscar and Victor X-Ray Papa. And go ahead, Gary, pick it up. You can use packet on 6 meters. I know you're going to ask.
Actually, I wasn't, but they've done that. They actually were doing that on and off. There's some activity like that. But I had a thought, or just, you know, as you were talking about the way the power of the of these little nets to do effective communications, I just kind of said, take it one step further. You know, if you link a mesh network, you know, if you link mesh network A with mesh network B, you know, down the road a little bit, and then you mesh B with C, you know, you can cover a decent area. And I would think that in a severe emergency where you had to cover multiple scenes, multiple areas, that would be extremely effective. That you could get, you know, a lot of coverage for. It's a good bang for the buck. I mean, that's for sure. That impressed me. I think that's one great potential. But then you go a little bit even further than that. And since, you know, you can interface just about anything to your computer, you know, you can take communications that you're doing on HF, digital communications on HF, you know, PSK31 or JT65 or whatever, and, you know, you could put that across your little ABCD mesh network too, and you know, you really do have some extremely strong capabilities there. So I just wanted to throw that in there. That's just what was going into my head. And yeah, I wish they would do a little bit more packet on 6 because I really would like to fool around more with that. I like messing with packet. Back to you. This is KC2RMO.
Absolutely, and you know, you got me thinking too. The Wi-Fi, any type of network basically can pass AX25 or packet traffic. It's all part of the OSI model, and I won't get into that. But you know, when you're talking about layer 1, 2, and 3 protocols, you know, that's packet. When you talk about a mesh network, you're getting into you know, layers 4, 5, 6, and 7. So it's phenomenal. Okay, Victor X-Ray Papa, you had a question or a comment. Go ahead.
This is N1TXV. I'm not sure who was trying to key up there, but that's twice I've heard that on. Packet radio. I can think back when I first got my ticket. I got very heavily involved in national traffic system. A little bit before internet, had to do with bulletin boards, and I can remember having a setup with working on a 2-meter frequency as far as the TNC control, picking up messages off the bulletin board for traffic handling, and very inexpensive. All you needed was a dummy node as far as the keyboard, monitor, TNC, and radio, and have a lot of fun with it. That's how we end up picking up a lot of our messages to pass on the traffic nets. And when the internet got involved, then, well, things got changed around a little bit, but still overall, it was quite a challenge, but I could just think back and say to myself, wow, what would we do without the, if we had something like the little Raspberry Pi computers? You know, we could really do quite a bit with it. And as far as APRS, that was something I had a bit of fun before it really got going into it. Working on the Hartford Marathon for quite a few years, where we end up having the beginning of the race, usually another one of the these are guys on bicycles, one at the beginning, one in the middle, and one at the end, and it came back to our communications control point, broadcast on the radio. Let me drop for a second. And it was just the idea that it was transmitted back to our communications control point and came over the computer, and we could tell exactly where the race was progressing on the course. 26.2-mile course. This was all, a lot of it was actually pretty well designed by HAMS as far as getting the radio hooked up and mapping, and a lot of the stuff was all before APRS really got the way it is today. But it was quite a challenge, and we always kept saying, hey, someday it's really going to pay off, and we never realized that being in the beginning of the system, it was a lot of work, but I could see where it definitely paid off, you know, because like I say, if we had an emergency pop up, that was the purpose of the one person in the middle, was if we had a emergency pop up, he would be able to respond and cover the area and give us first-hand information, and never had to worry about that, but it was, I always thought about it, I said, wow, this is quite the thing, early stages of communications that really do pay off. N1TXP, back to net control.
Okay, thanks, Rick. Appreciate your insight there. And I guess the thing that that we have to keep in mind is, you know, especially when we're talking about emergency communications, you know, going point to point or getting something up and running is what hams have always proven to be very good at. You know, in a pinch, we can put it together and make it work. But the one aspect of packet radio, it's been around for so long, there's so much software and so many devices available that make it real easy to get involved with. And I would suggest people get involved with their local clubs and help out in building that network of packet systems that would, well, I remember there was a packet system from, what was it, Miami, all the way up to Ottawa, Canada, all the way out to California at one time before the internet came around. Anyway, I'm pretty much done letting out my hot air, so I'm going to pass it on to Slip and Slide George. NO70, you ready to pick it up, George? I hope I was able to answer your questions about emergency communications. Over.
W4RFG in the group, RFJ in the group, NO70. Yes, sir, and I sure am glad that I asked for you to go ahead first because you and Rick provided the perfect bridge as you talked about the history of amateur radio innovation, the application to modern technology here, and the place of amateur radio in emergency communications. Could not have been a better place for this. So I am ready to get started. Permission to proceed, sir, W4FG, NO70.
Well, if you use a J, you can go ahead.
You know, these guys are giving me the bad habits right here. Thank you, thank you, Roger, W4RFJ, and the group, TINNET, NO70. My topic is packet radio, emergency communications. I'm going to unashamedly brag on ham radio contributions to society, and I'm going to maybe occasionally point out where we have failed once in a while and call. And in both cases, ham radio and packet radio have contributed to the saving of lives, have contributed to the economic vibrancy of the world's economies, including our own nations. And in other times, when packet radio or the networks did not quite perform up to specification, we have lost money for businesses or lost lives. So this was the subject of work with packet that for me began back in the mid-1980s with my interest in building an emergency communications center in Flagstaff, Arizona, that then picked up packet as a part of its effort. So let me break here and I'll continue on. So TIN, this is NO70. So what I'm saying then is that amateur radio has contributed to society's people and business members as amateur radio operators have paid out of their own pocket to advance technologies used by the businesses and individuals who adopted the protocols. AX.25 is a modification of the X.25 protocol, which can be argued to be a building block of the TCP/IP protocol, which is the basis of the Internet, which has certainly changed society. This shows the amateur radio's dedication to experimentation and amateur radio's dedication to serving the public through innovation, emergency communication support, and service to the general public. Right? Ham radio is known for its service through real-world application of amateur radio experience, knowledge, and innovation, such as these very good engineers who have been working with us a lot longer than I have, who we've had the benefit of hearing from tonight. The innovation of ham radio started way back in the early 1920s when the first ham radio station came out and even actually broadcast some music, which nowadays is illegal because the way that they separated out the place of the stations was by making it illegal for ham radio to broadcast music. That began the broadcast industry, according to some broadcast history textbooks. Right? So, Roger and Rick covered about how the packet radio can be transmitted by hooking up audio signals into the send and receive portions of your RF platform, transceivers, handy talkies, whatever it might be. And the packet then has to be sent through a reliable network. And by the way, that is what used to be known as a terminal node controller back in the early or mid-1980s. Packet transmissions, while speedy and time-saving and efficient, though, have one point of failure. When you have packet data communications going over a network with a shared bandwidth, then you have network collisions of those very packet frames. Think of packet frames as a cord of wood in the backyard that you have to make last through the wintertime, right? The more wood you're going to need through the wintertime, the more you have to chop up. The more you have to chop up, the more of a chance that they're going to roll into each other as you chop them. That is a real-world analogy to packet collisions. There is, therefore, an economic benefit to the general public during emergency communications needs and to businesses adopting network protocols like X.25 to have a minimum amount of packet collisions occurring, right? So what we as ham radio operators have had as a challenge as we developed TNCs and early packet radio AX.25 was how to minimize those collisions. Now, how can you know how to minimize something that's occurring if you don't know why it's occurring? And that was where I want to make sure I'm going to read the text box here. Okay, timing settings and so forth, that's a very good point. And the text box has the mention of adjusting the timing settings. And absolutely that can be the case. However, when you're dealing with some of the very early packets, some of those adjustments were not so easy to do or so apparent as to where they should be adjusted. Very good point. Thank you, Gemini. I appreciate that. So, and keep in mind, too, that when one is trying to publicize to a hard-nosed business school, when one is getting one's MBA and bring packet radio and a ham radio operations into the business world and say to a business school, hey, here's a whole new technology that's going to influence business for the next few decades, that's a hard sell, especially for it to be accepted as a master's thesis. And ham radio, I'm so grateful to ham radio for having done enough innovation that I was able to sell them on the idea of doing a statistical study of packet collision occurrence. And what I'd like to share with you now, if the net will permit me, is a little bit about how that statistical study was done and then the impact on modern-day communications, including MCOM. Break. So having been successfully argued with the business school that by knowing more about packet collisions and the reason why they occurred, then I was able to gain access to the campus Honeywell TPS6, a software package called SPSS, which used to stand for Statistical Programming for the Social Sciences, or now later known as SPSS. Now, let me break here. So a AX.25 packet can be argued as not having a unique packet identifier. It'd be very easy to know if a collision has occurred during a transmission on a network circuit if one could just look only at the sequential identifier of the packet. However, there are not enough identifiers used before it recycles where that's functional. You have to include a date and time stamp and also the amateur radio sending and receiving calls on that, and that includes a left shift bit for the programmers, which can make it a little bit difficult to properly sequence the packets to then see if a collision occurred based on the packet ID. Break. So the collision study was performed by looking for repetitions of the packet ID through reject frames or packets, through retransmit requests, and through simple duplication studies and elimination of the duplicate packet itself. Right? So by scanning the metadata of the packet, the metadata being defined as the hitter giving the packet number and call sign involved, and any other additional flags that are needed, including date and time, then one can look for duplications of that same, and by looking at the number of duplications, you have, by definition, for the purpose of the study done, a collided packet that had to be retransmitted. A retransmitted packet needs time to be done, and that reduces the efficiency of the network, slows the throughput of the information, and can cost money, or in some cases, for income, cost lives. Frank? On the other side of this, as we, as ham radio operators, have contributed to the technology, contributed to innovation that would have been impossible in the business world alone, and then gained the knowledge through hobbies where ham radio operators paid for this technology out of their own pocket, bought all the equipment through salaries made by working for these same businesses, and then the businesses benefited both from the efforts of ham radio operators as volunteers and as employees of the company. We have an exponential increase in the technology of communications that now has emerged into the internet and mesh technology. So therefore, I think that ham radio operators should pat themselves on the back. So I'm going to say kudos to all the ham radio operators that came before me, and those that know more now. So congratulations to all of you for what you've done there. My gratitude to you, because I would have had a very tough time arguing for any other thesis on this because of my love and interest in packet radio and ham radio operator, and I owe each and every one of you on this conference a lot in terms of my life and my career because of the innovations, professionalism, and contributions that each of you have made in your personal and professional capacities in your knowledge of ham radio protocols. I will turn it over for questions, and thank you so much for listening to this very heartfelt and memory-filled topic of packet. Let me turn it over for questions. This is NO70.
6, Victor George.
Thank you, Gordon. 6, Victor, go ahead.
Yeah, I was curious in two areas. I don't think you specifically mentioned IBM this evening, but it was my understanding that they had changed the nomenclature of the statistic developing scenario. Were you involved with that? Did your thesis at the master's level produce interest in IBM? Did you get paid anything for that? Did they pirate it, or what happened? Over.
KY6V in the group, NO70, very good question. I'm afraid as a teaching assistant, the only thing I got paid was for time spent as a teaching assistant. The SPSS was on a Honeywell DPS-6. That then later, I lost track of SPSS when I went over to SAS, which is a competitive product. However, the IBM platform, I do understand SPSS is still a very worthy market of statistical software. I think I heard another question in there, Gordon, but maybe you can let me know if I covered everything. KY6V, NO70.
No, you covered it very, very nicely. From your standpoint, let's see how I can phrase this question. How have you seen the network improve? Let's stick with collisions as an example. Some of this effort that you were involved in and others had to get people thinking. What did they do to improve it? Create more layers in the infrastructure, or what was the technical push? Over.
KY6V on the TIN, this is NO70. definitely improvements in the layers and protocols, which goes back to the OSI model that we're trying to somewhat avoid with this. An example of the progression of the TNC1 to the TNC2 in terms of the Heathkit kits that were marketed at the time. The TNC1 was a rack size model, and then with the advancements, the TNC2 was about the size of a 12 or 2400 baud modem, a U.S. robotics modem, later. RFJ makes the point that we still deal with collisions in Ethernet and Wi-Fi networks still, which is very true, which then raises the other part of the answer in that the, let me break here and finish answering. Regarding the increases or improvements in performance have also resulted with from improvements in protocol, IPv4, IPv6 can be examples. With the changes to the headers, to the length of the packets that can be transmitted because of improved hardware transmission speeds, where we can get the same amount of data burst in the same number of milliseconds compared to what used to be possible with older transmission technology, which goes back to networking and where mesh networks will be then, of course, a new frontier in improvement in the transmission bandwidth. So I could go into more detail, but I think I better keep from making it too boring. Back to you, Gordon, or for anyone else for any questions. KY6D for any more questions, and then open up to others, NO70.
Yeah, okay, very well done. You answered my question. You might want to tell the group out here that when you were fighting the dorms and situations of going through your master's and putting on this thesis, that you built your own TNC. I remember you telling me that. Over.
Yes, thank you, Gordon. I need to also, when we talk about building a TNC, I also need to give credit to Silent Key of N7GBC, my wife Carolyn. Back then, she also shared soldering iron duties there as well to help build that, and others on the campus as well. I also have to give credit to our neighbors in the Merritt student dorm who allowed us to hang an HF antenna out under the balcony rail, hide it under that from the dorm masters so that we could send an HF signal out using the dorm balcony railing as a part of the radiation antenna, radiating antenna. And the mainframe department, where we were able to keep the mainframe for one additional year, funded on the campus as a result of this study being accepted as well. So, therefore, to the university as well for being willing to fund the computers, DPS-6, for an additional year. So we had a lot of support and a lot of backing, and all this from ham radio packet technology. And I am sold on ham radio's contribution score. So any other questions, please call in 070.
RFJ.
Thank you. Roger, go ahead, RFJ.
Okay. I was trying to remember the technology. It's CSMA-CD technologies used on Ethernets and most networks for compensating for collisions. It's carrier sense multiple access collision detection. Type of technology. It's basically a protocol. If it detects a collision, it takes a random time limit and sends out another packet. Anyway, long story short story longer, I wanted to add that. It went flying past in the text box, so I wanted to add that.
Thank you very much, Roger, for bringing that up. Yes, that brings us right up into modern technology with the CSMA-CD. And again, I think we have to go back and look at the history of ham radio contributions and technology, and that ham radio deserves to give itself a pat on the back for the contributions that it has made to society, both the human citizens of society and the business citizens of society. Well, we're not human, still do provide a lot. So yes, I tried to kind of bridge here, put a bridge here between packet radio technology and the social and business sciences, which of course would be a requirement for the master's thesis, and that comes right down to, hey, thank goodness we have advances in protocols like you just mentioned, Roger. Thank you for mentioning that. But before I have Jay in the group, and I'll summon up.
Okay, I guess, Gordon, I'm not sure where we go from here. I think I covered the amateur radio emergency service part of it, and thank you very much, George. That was pretty cool.
Okay, did you turn it back to George or back to me, Raj? And thank you. Looks like I was doubling with you, George. I'm sorry about that. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, my apologies. No, I was turning it back over to you to take it over, because I know that Daryl has some good stuff for us here as well. So I wanted to make sure that I turn it to you as back and forth to turn it over to Daryl. So I wasn't sure what RFJ or you. So would you turn it over to Daryl at your convenience, please, Gordon, KY6V, NO7O.
Well, I don't see that rascal. I hope that he's okay. Very abnormal for him not to show up to a meeting like this here tonight. Let me pull up our listing, since Echolink doesn't list everybody. And I do not see Daryl on the marquee as we speak. Something interesting, some people may not know this, but the Echolink program, as published, will only show a maximum of 16 connected stations at a time over on the far right users listing. Now, you could have 50 people connected to our server and only see 16 of those. And then the listing rotates as each person takes a transmission. We at SouthCars offer a user list, which is website based. It's advertised on our website that you can see a complete listing of everybody that is connected over and above that magic 16 number. So, okay, well, I think that we're coming pretty much to a close. I see that we're about an hour and 34 minutes. My goodness gracious, I was enjoying that so much I wasn't watching the clock. So we're getting down to wrapping this and getting the fat lady to sing and all of that nice stuff. Any other contributions for the evening? Any comments? Any questions? Anybody that wants to say hello, call now. KY6V for SouthCars.
KC2RO.
I know why you had trouble with Roger's call. You know, every now and then, you upcut, you know, it's broadcast talk. We got the RM out, and the O didn't come out on that last one, Gary, but I knew it was you. Go ahead, sir.
Well, if it was Christmas, it would be no L, but it's beside the point. I just wanted, it was great network. I just wanted to, pass that along, and, you know, throw my two cents worth in there. I think you know, packet and networking via radio are subjects that I think anybody who's serious in the hobby kind of comes across, and you know, they kind of look at it. I think probably the average guy just kind of takes a look at it and says, "Well, that's cool. You know, maybe I'll get around to doing it someday." But there's a lot of mystery, I think, that's attached to it, and a lot of people just sitting there going, "Well, yeah, I'd like to play around with it, but I don't even know where to start, you know. And if you Google this stuff, there aren't a lot of clear answers. I mean, there's a lot of information, but there's nothing that says to a new user or a person that wants to get involved with this, here's step one, here's step two, you know, that sort of thing. So the more nets like this, the better, because you take some of the mystery out of it. And I think, you know, the more people that hear that, obviously, the more people are going to get involved. But good stuff. Enjoyed hearing it. We'll go back to you, sir. This is KC2RMO.
Very nicely articulated, that last call sign. All right. Very good, Gary. Well, I can tell you I slept and breathed Packet for a long, long time, probably about 20 years. I started early in the 80s and marched on into other areas about 2000, I guess, maybe 1999, something. But I had an awful lot of fun. And I put together a network, Gary. I don't know if I've ever mentioned this to you. I think I mentioned it to George. Being in the broadcast business, I had a lot of friends at a lot of broadcast stations, and all of these broadcast stations had tall towers. And I put a triple node system on about 30 towers throughout South Florida and into North Florida. Let me buy a nickel. And each of those towers, the shortest one was 1,539 feet, the tallest was 2,000, and the average was around 1,700. So we had these packet guys mounted up on the towers way up at the tippy top. And boy, did they talk. And we had just one heck of a system. When I say triple port, we had a 2 meters, 220, and 440. We used the 220 and the 440 for backbone connectivity and message handling. So we had a 2-meter transceiver, a 220 transceiver, a 440 transceiver, its associated TNC, everything cabled together with RS-232, and the antennas with a coax line of a 7 or 8 feet at the longest. You mount the antenna on the tower and you mount the equipment in a box on a platform at 1,700 feet. I mean, you got something going, Gary. Over.
In the words of James Brown, good God. that's very, very, very impressive stuff. That is great. I wish I had been in the area when you had that going. I would have loved that, without a doubt. Our own local wizard, Kevin, KD2SL, whom, by the way, just to get something unrelated in there, it's still going to get back to me on that whole business of linking the six up here, which would link to everything else. But he has been crazy. He doesn't. There's a linking issue right now on the 6-meter repeater that's been going on for about 3 months. Not three weeks. And he has not been able to get there to fix it. So he's swamped. But he's a good guy, and he will get back to us on stuff. So just kind of waiting on that. But I would just love to be involved in a in a network like that. I just think that would have been phenomenal. Yeah, really. But hey, you know, at least you did it. You know, you did it. That's great. I just think there's it's something again. People are you get a lot of lip service, you know, to it, or little recognition here, little recognition there. Nobody really knows, or a lot of people really don't really know what it is or understand what it can do. So when you have something like what you built out there, you know, it's a great demonstrator for that. But, you know, hopefully more nets like this, we'll get more stuff like that built too. That would be awesome. KC2, RMO, back to the net.
I think your enunciation is improving. I'm just pulling your trouser leg there, Gary. Okay. Very good. Anybody else before we close here this evening? Gordon, KY6V for South Cars. Call now, please.
Victor X-Ray Papa.
Victor X-Ray Papa. Hello, Mr. Ohio. Go right ahead, Rick. Over.
Very good. I don't know if anybody noticed that I put a link up in the text box. Basically, intro into packet radio as far as setting up, breaking it down as to baud rate and all the particulars. I was looking for the original one that I used to refer to, but I couldn't find it. This was an updated version, and I can put it back up again for at the end of the list. But it really does explain quite a bit. Baud rate, CNC 1 and 2, and the whole nine yards, and it almost, it, I would say, Kim, very close to how you could set it up for your own use, but that was one of the first things that, when I got involved in traffic handling, that our net manager said, hey, if you really want to get involved, read up on it. Understand it, and you will find it much easier. So like I say, I can put a, I can relist it back up on there. But this particular link does go into the intro and really quite informative. And once the XP back to net control.
Yeah, it's sort of amazing, you know, what you can find on the internet. Just about everything that you have a question on. Well, thank you for that, Rick. I was just thinking back, I've forgotten more about packing than I knew, I guess. But I still have an awful lot of equipment down here. I must have, oh, probably close to a half a dozen TNCs. And associated radios, 2 meters, 220, and 440, and stuff like that that was all used at one point or another. I'll tell you one thing, though, Gary, just to give you a chuckle. One of these towers that I had was a 1,500-footer, 1,539, but it wasn't a broadcast tower. It belonged to the drug enforcement. I just happened to know one of the boys, and he says, go ahead and put it up. Anybody else before we close? We're getting close. KY6V for South Cars.
NO70.
I sure like that call. November Oscar 7 Oscar. You ought to put Mickey Mouse 2 on the end of it. Over.
Yep, got my ears on already, Gordon. So, yes, and I really appreciate what Roger Chief had to say out there to CMS, CSMA, and CD. You know, the and with what you were saying, Gordon, about the transmission infrastructure, towers, and multiple microwave dishes and so forth there, you know, packet collisions. When doing the research, the collisions I had to define because of the limitations in scope of the academic resources available as any repeated packet, which could include collisions with, for example, other RF signals, which CSMA or CD or timing adjustments and so forth may or may not help with. So that was one very difficult part. Oh my gosh, the number of hours spent trying to program that. So collisions there. And the other thought I had regarding the question that you had asked, as you mentioned, SPSS was bought by IBM, I believe it was about 2000, late 2000, 2009, something like that. However, they do have available a free download or student downloads of the SPSS package, which in my opinion is a lot easier to use for a lot of quantitative analysis compared to the SAS program that's geared for much more much larger data sets. Thank you, Gordon. That's my final thoughts. KY6 of the group, NO70.
All right, very good. Well, thank you very much for that, George, and thank you, everybody. We're going to go ahead and close it. I want to particularly thank Roger and thank George for being with us. We'll have to find out what happened to Daryl. I hope everything's okay up there in Newfoundland. Maybe they got snowed in or something. It happens about this time of the year. Or he lost his infrastructure that we're talking about. He lost his mesh network. All right, good night, everybody. Thanks for coming by. This has been South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. VOIP net schedules and general information may be found on the voip.southcars.com website. And again, we want to thank everybody for participating, and we'll see you down the coax or the next time South Cars gets together. KY6V is now returning the server back to normal use and abuse. Thank you.
KC2RMO73, everybody.
Hey, thanks, Gary.
And W4RFJ is going in between the sheets. If you guys feel the earth move, that's just me hitting my bed.
I don't think I'm going to be far behind. Okay, thanks, Roger. KY6V.
New. Thank you.